Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
People Fixing the World is the podcast looking for solutions to the problems we face today.
It could potentially ease the suffering of millions.
We have a solution. Let's do it.
People Fixing the World from the BBC World Service.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report here on the BBC World Service. I'm Rahul Tandon. Plenty coming up as always as France decides to take action against shrinkflation.
Consumers have the right to know when the produce are reducing and the price are going up because industry were doing it behind the back of the consumer.
And we're going to find out why the Chinese are sipping less imported wine. But let's start by talking about a Chinese app, because lots of people around the world use TikTok. But this weekend, the US Senate will vote on a requirement that the company, the Chinese company ByteDance, which owns TikTok, should divest from it. This is due to security concerns. Let's get the thoughts on this of our North America business correspondent, Erin Delmer. And firstly, on the popularity of TikTok in the US.
Extremely popular, extremely influential, and that becomes even more so when we talk about the younger generation. That's the group that is more likely to be on TikTok and be on TikTok for quite a bit amount of time every day. We're talking about some 170 million estimated U.S. users. And what's really astronomical to me is the growth, because if we go back to the year 2020, that number was hovering around 100 million. And when you zoom out and you look at the 140 some odd countries around the world where TikTok appears, you're looking at around 1 billion users. It's just an astronomical audience.
It really is, isn't it? This is not the first time that we have seen calls from those in government to take action against TikTok. What are we actually talking about in this case that may happen?
Well, we are looking at an effort that had been brewing for a while and a measure that actually passed the House of Representatives, the lower chamber of the U.S. government, to either force a divestiture of TikTok from its parent company, ByteDance, which is a Chinese-owned company, or face a ban in the United States. And there's the nuts and bolts business angle of this, and then there's the political angle of this. You know, nuts and bolts, what they would say is that app stores wouldn't be allowed to offer the app anymore and that internet service providers wouldn't be able to host it. There is another argument here where China would have to, by what we've seen if passed as predicate, agree to that. And it's very hard to see China actually agreeing to divest such a popular and such a monetarily influential asset. So it raises the question of who would buy it. And considering how popular it is, how expensive it is, and the fact that many of the major tech companies in the U.S. are facing antitrust challenges for their size and their acquisitions anyway, it makes it hard to think one of them could scoop it up. And so this is the sort of quagmire that we find ourselves in with that specifically.
Is this about TikTok specifically? And people talk a lot about national security here. Or is this part of the much wider U.S.-China trade debate that's taking place in the U.S.?
Certainly, you can't look at this in a vacuum, right? You can't ignore the fact that the U.S. and China are at loggerheads over certain things. Some of them are economic and business dealings. But at the same time, the Biden administration is trying to toe a line here and not have quite so much disruption. So enter that environment, this TikTok debate. Yes, the government, the U.S. government, says that this is about national security and about safeguarding user data. That is the line about why they think TikTok needs to be banned in the United States.
Erin Delmore there. Let's pick up on that vote that's taking place on the weekend. I've been speaking to the Democratic Congressman, Raja Krishnamurti. He's one of those sponsoring the bill.
It turns out ByteDance, this Chinese company, is controlled by the Chinese Communist Party. In fact, the editor-in-chief of ByteDance is the general secretary of the Chinese Communist Party's cell that's been embedded in ByteDance to make sure that all of its products, including TikTok, adhere to what they call, quote-unquote, correct political direction. That's why we are so concerned about TikTok. This is not a ban. We hope that TikTok continues to operate, but not under the ultimate control of the Chinese Communist Party.
Okay, let's pick up on that point to begin with. A number of points to pick up on. ByteDance say they're not controlled by the Chinese Communist Party. They have categorically denied those accusations. They've done it in the Congress, haven't they?
They have, and they've made a number of false statements before Congress, which has really caused lawmakers to adopt this bill. They said that none of their American data is actually accessible by people in China. And that turned out to be false because Chinese employees routinely access this data, sometimes unbeknownst to TikTok USA employees.
If TikTok and ByteDance are so dangerous, why is the president of the United States on TikTok?
Well, I'm not going to tell him how to campaign. It's not on my personal phone. It's been banned from all government devices. But, you know, I would just
say surely if it is so dangerous in terms of Americans' data and the Chinese using that data, he should set an example by not being on it.
Again, I think that this is something where it's currently legal. We have 170 million people using it. But going forward, I think that we have to create protections for everybody.
You are calling for the disinvestment, aren't you, of ByteDance from TikTok? Why not just ban it?
Because I think that we would want to allow for the platform to continue. I think that it still has a lot of good content. And of course, you know, there's some great dance videos out there. But the most important thing is that it's not under the control or operation of an adversary country.
The American Civil Liberties Union have said quite clearly that they think that these attempts of yours will breach the First Amendment because so many millions of Americans are using it.
There's no First Amendment right to espionage. There's no First Amendment right to harm our national security. All of these rights are balanced against each other. I think that the issue here is very similar to, for instance, what you see with regard to ownership of a news station or a newspaper. In our country, as in many countries, there are limits on foreign ownership of those media outlets. And similarly, we don't want a foreign adversary, certainly, to be able to control social media platforms.
But a lot of people would say to that, there are a lot of American companies that control social media in many parts of the world. What is wrong if another country controls a little bit of it in the US?
Well, I think that the issue here is that, at least from our standpoint, I'm not going to speak for lawmakers in other countries, we need to enact laws that would protect ourselves against threats emanating from foreign adversary countries. Each country needs to make its own decision.
And so when you look at the vote that's coming up over the weekend, when it comes to ByteDance and TikTok, that is part of something much bigger, isn't it? It's an important issue in itself, but this is also part of that much wider US-China relationship.
Correct. It's an important part of that relationship. It's not the entirety, but it's part of a broader pattern where, in my opinion, we have to do everything we can to stabilize the relationship.
So this vote that's taking place on the weekend, how important do you think it is in terms of that wider discussion that we're having, not just about ByteDance and TikTok, but about the US and China?
Well, somebody the other day said this is either a Chamberlain or Churchill moment. I hope that we remember that when we stand up to aggressors, that we're doing the right thing and we live up to the Churchill moment that it needs to be.
Congressman Raja Krishnamurti there. There is a business side of this as well, though, because many small businesses are saying in the US they're worried about the impact banning TikTok, even getting it to divest in terms of the US market, could have on them.
The message that I really want to get home to the American government and everybody that is trying to pass this bill is you will be destroying small businesses like us. This is our livelihood. You will be destroying the American dream that we really believe in.
Let's speak to a small business. Jordan Smith runs the Elevated Closet in Texas, which provides clothes for tall women. Jordan, thanks so much for joining us on World Business Report. Tell us and our listeners about how TikTok is helping your business.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. So I have a very niche business. Again, it is for tall women, and there's no demographics to find tall women. And I've tried on other social media platforms, but TikTok has been really helping me the last 2 years, I would say, exponentially grow not only my following and eyes on my business, but it's now showing that in sales. The last 5 months, I've had 30% of my sales strictly from TikTok Shop.
What does TikTok provide to you that other social media companies can't provide to your business?
That's a good question. You know, the biggest thing has just been their algorithm. Like, they are showing the right people my content, and tall women are finding me there where they're not finding me on the other platforms. And then not only that, I now have TikTok shop where they're watching the clothes on my body, on my models' bodies, and they're able to like purchase right there and find something because it is a very emotional reaction for them. Again, being niche, it's something that is not out there for them. So when they see it, they get excited and they buy it. And that has been the biggest thing for me.
When you hear, and I know you were listening to the US congressman talking about the need to take action against TikTok, does that make you worried about the impact this could have on your business?
I'm extremely worried. And you know, that's why I went to DC. I just got back today to talk to my senators about it because I'm extremely worried. Like I just told you, the last 5 months, 30% of my sales, that's just from TikTok shop. That's not, you know, the people coming over and finding my website that way. I'm extremely worried that that's going to kill my small business. I am a very small niche business and I'm barely a little over 4 years old, and it would really, really impact me. And especially with wanting to grow the way I'm growing, it's making the decisions to keep growing and to keep moving in that direction, not knowing where this platform is going to be because it's a huge chunk of my business.
When you spoke to those politicians in Washington and you made those points as you're making to us, what did they say to you?
You know, I was really, really grateful that they were listening and they were empathetic. We spoke to two different offices, and the first office was Senator Cornyn's office, and they were very empathetic and they were listening to me as a small business in Texas and saying, you know, we understand, we are doing our due diligence to try and have those conversations. And so that was nice to hear. The other office, Senator Cruz's office, was basically they were more talking about, you know, the security threats.
Mm. And do you understand those security concerns and the reasons why some may say that has to take precedence over your business?
100%. I understand where they're coming from. Of course, as American, I want us to be safe. But I haven't heard anything clear cut as to what exactly those security, I don't understand it. It's not my expertise, you know. The only thing that they were explaining to me and my husband was that they feared that ByteDance employees and TikTok employees were talking a lot amongst each other and somehow divulging information between each other. So that's the only thing that they kind of talked about as far as security concerns.
So here you are coming back from Washington, your business growing, but this huge political debate about to take place over what happens with TikTok. What's going through your mind?
I'm just really worried. It's been somewhere where I've been building a community. It's somewhere where I'm getting sales from, and it's been something I've been working at so long. And this last year has just, like I said, exponentially grown. And to see that piece of it taken away would just really be a shot, in the chest.
Let us see what happens. Thank you, Jordan, so much for joining us here on World Business Report. Let's bring in Chris Lowe, Chief Economist for FHN Financial, based in New York. Chris, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Fascinating to hear from the congressman. Fascinating to hear from a small business as well. This is a complicated issue, isn't it?
It's extraordinary how complicated it is. And just for disclosure, my daughter is an employee at TikTok, so I need to put that on the table
as well.
So obviously it's a story I'm watching very closely.
What do you make of it then in terms of the impact that TikTok has on small businesses? And I suppose the wider part that TikTok is playing at a time when relations, trade relations between the US and China are so tense.
Well, look, it's an absolutely unique platform. The algorithm is very powerful. They do seem to have better luck getting the right content in front of the right people. And that's why people are crazy about it. That's why, you know, emotions are running so strong at the thought of possibly losing it. That said, I work for a bank. We're not allowed to have it on our phones because our security team believes they can mine data not just related to the app, but anything else on your device as well.
And final question on this. We've had precedent here before, didn't we? We had a state in the US, Montana, trying to ban TikTok. That didn't go through because of the courts.
That's right. But doing it at the federal level, I think it's more likely it will be done in a way that stands up to challenges. But it will be challenged in the court, if not by ByteDance, then by the ACLU or a similar organization. Yeah. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, let us see what happens. All right, the NASDAQ, what's going on? It's been a pretty bad week, Chris.
Yeah, a pretty bad week and a pretty bad month. You know, the selling began on the 1st of April. We're down about 6.5% on the NASDAQ so far this month, but it really accelerated this week. And my sense is there's a couple of things going on. One of them, we get tech earnings next week. People are nervous because the story over the course of the first 4 months of this year has been, rate cuts in the U.S. a lot less likely. And if they come, they'll be shallower and later. These companies are very sensitive to interest rates. The other thing, it's tax week. And taxes are higher this year because people have bigger capital gains last year than the year before. They took a lot of money out of the markets in order to pay their taxes. And I think that's hitting particularly hard right now.
And final question to you before we talk about some other issues. We have seen a lot of instability in the Middle East, haven't we, over the last 24 hours. That's affecting oil prices, isn't it? But maybe not the markets as much as people thought they were going to be affected.
Yeah, we saw last night when the first news reports came in about an Israeli attack on Iran, oil prices jumped. Gold prices jumped. It was a classic flight to safety, risk assets on. But by this morning's trading, both of those were below yesterday's close. And I think the key element was that the attack was small enough in scale that it allowed the Iranians to save face. They claim they stopped all of it. And hopefully that means de-escalation. That seems to be the way traders are looking at it, too.
Chris, stay with us. We're going to talk to you about a couple of issues.
You've heard of Charlie Chaplin, right? Well, Charlie Chaplin was my grandfather, and there was a time when he was the biggest star in all the world. But something happened, not just to him, but to hundreds of artists in Hollywood. They were forced to leave, forced out.
All episodes of Hollywood Exiles from the BBC World Service and CBC are available now. Search for Hollywood Exiles wherever you get your podcasts.
As well, you're with World Business Report here on the BBC World Service. Let's move to France now, because this is an important story. The French government has announced a new rule on Friday that will require stores to tell customers when a product becomes smaller, but its price stays the same or increases. If you're wondering what that's called, well, you may have heard this phrase. It's a practice that's known as shrinkflation. I've been speaking to Camille Dorias. He's the campaigns director at Food Watch France, who were amongst those campaigning for the French government to take action.
Shrinkflation is a practice made by food industry that reduce the amount that there is inside the product and increase the price and often the price per kilo. So you have a decrease on what you buy, but you're paying more for it.
And it has become a huge problem, hasn't it, with inflation high in countries like France. What do you make of what the French government has announced today? How is that going to help tackle the problem?
So you cannot forbid this kind of practice because it's about like freedom of industry of doing exactly what they want on the product. But what we want at Foodwatch is transparency, because we think that consumers have the right to know when the produce are reducing and the price are going up, because industry were doing it on the back of, behind the back of the consumer. So this is what we pointed out, and this is what we were asking the government to do, to oblige industry and supermarket to inform consumer.
So basically, there'll be signs, won't there, on products telling customers now that you're paying the same amount, but you're going to get less than you did before.
So what we will have will be the 1st of July in French supermarket is signs saying this produce has been reduced of 2 grams and increased its price of 50 cents of euro, for example, and it will give the full information to the consumer, because a consumer cannot have in mind what was the price 2 months ago and what was the weight of the produce 2 months ago. So it's important that it's the supermarket or the industries that gives this information.
The retailers, some of them are saying this is going to be hard to implement. And they're also saying that it's not the retailers who are the problem, but it's the food manufacturers who should be doing this. What do you make of that?
It's always the same. It's kind of a ping pong or tennis match between retailers and industries that for 1 year and a half saying, it's not my fault, it's their fault. At Foodwatch, what we say, we don't care which one is fault is. What we want is information for consumer, and they should deliver it on the package if it's industries that want to deliver it, or directly on the shelf for the supermarket. So at the end, we want a consumer to have the information. They can discuss about how to do it, but it's not our problem.
If a retailer doesn't do this, what will happen?
So as it is been decided by law, by the Ministry of Economy, they can have fine, they can be recalled that they should do it. So now there can be control on this shrinkflation practice, where before, as it was not illegal not to inform consumer, they could not be even controlled by the state. So now there is a control. And now when Foodwatch will find new shrinkflation produce without information in a supermarket, we will be able to complain also to the government.
This has been a huge problem, not just in France, but across Europe. Would you like to see other countries following the practice that France is now putting in place?
It's a practice in Europe, but all around the world. In United States also, there is a lot about shrinkflation. It's even where I found the first example and the idea to look at it in French supermarket. So I think this is kind of a practice you can find everywhere, whether it's food products and companies that want to do benefit behind the back of the consumer. The best way to fight this kind of problem is really to give transparency, because I'm pretty sure that now that they are obliged to tell, they will never do it again.
You have been in discussions with the French government for some time about putting this in place. Has it taken too long? Should they have done this a long time ago? Because inflation is beginning to fall now, isn't it?
Yeah, but inflation was a risk that shrinkflation happened into supermarket, but it happened before and will happen after. So it's okay that it took a bit too long. It took too long. It could have done it faster. But we understand also that they wanted to see and consider every possibility. Is it industry? Is it supermarket? What Europe authorized you to do or not on when you're talking about labeling? So it took a bit too long. But at least at the end, we have the information and consumer will have the information in the shelves.
You've been speaking to the French finance minister, haven't you, Bruno Le Maire? What does he say to you?
So it's a problem that they understand. And it's really interesting to see that the French government even took the word of Foodwatch to say it's like misleading. It's not a practice that should be done. Consumers are right to be angry about this practice. And I think the French government really understood that. And that's why they put this transparency. But we know at Foodwatch that this won't solve inflation problem. It's important because it's about transparency and right to consumer to have information, but it will not solve inflation issue and food precarity in France. So we still have a lot of discussion to have with the French Minister of Economy.
Chris Lowe still with us. Interesting to hear from Camille briefly, if you don't mind. A problem in the US as well, shrinkflation.
Yeah, that's right. And listen, I think this is a really sensible solution. You can't fight the laws of supply and demand. It's like fighting the law of gravity. But consumers should know what's going on.
They certainly should. Let's go back to talking about China now, because China seen a growth in wine sales over the last few years. But in the last few months, we've seen fall in the demand for imported wine. Jennifer Pack from our partners Marketplace has been looking at this in Shanghai.
For more than a decade, Shanghai's Sanyanjian operated as a wine bar where folks could sit and relax with a glass of wine. But the business was hit so hard during the pandemic that last year, the owner, Leon Liang, pivoted, and he turned it into a shop where people can buy wine by the bottle to take out.
When we run a wine bar, every month we can sell roughly around 1,500 bottles. But now every month we can sell, let's say, over 3,500 bottles per month.
At a big wine show in Shanghai, vendors complained they were hurting and had been since before the pandemic. Australian wine exporter Vikas Gupta outlined part of the problem.
You walk here and count the number of labels. There are 200,000-300,000 types of wine here. He says China's wine market is crowded. His sales have dropped 60-70% from pre-pandemic levels. Then there's China's economy. It's still growing, but not as fast as before. And that hurts wine sales, says Sebastian Carreau, a seventh-generation winemaker from France.
The wine here is used for the business. They use the wine to give some presents to good clients.
And when business is slow, he says, there's no need to do that. His sales are only 40% of what they were in 2019. The wine industry is also vulnerable to geopolitics, like when Australia's government wanted to probe the origins of COVID in 2020. Soon after, the Chinese government investigated Australia for unfair subsidies and dumping, says wine consultant Ying Kai.
China increased the tariff on Australian wine by as much as 200%. So sales of Australian wine in China fell off a cliff in 2021 and 2022.
China has now lifted those punitive tariffs, but the tariffs on American wine are still in place because of ongoing trade tensions. Even so, says Ying Kai, there are many reasons to be hopeful about the wine industry here. China still ranks among the world's top 10 wine-consuming nations. But he says wine makes up only 2% of the country's alcoholic drinks market. The preferred drinks are beer and a fiery grain alcohol called baijiu.
China is still a largely untapped market for wine. There's still a lot of potential for expansion.
That's what's brought Abdul Khalilov Rusbek to start importing wine from his native Moldova.
We want to enter the Chinese market mainly because of the war in Ukraine. We used to be able to sell 15 million bottles a year to Russia and Ukraine. Once the war began, we lost both markets.
Back at the San Yanjian wine shop, owner Lian Liang says he's opening another branch in Shanghai. He's crunched the numbers.
It's around 300 RMB per person every night.
He's setting up in an area where there's lots of restaurants with very poor wine lists. He reckons if diners see his shop, they might buy a bottle of fine wine for $40 and take it to the restaurant. Many don't charge extra for bringing your own bottle. So how do you see your business in the next 3 to 5 years?
I think all the Chinese market is recovering, and more people, they're still drinking wine.
And what they would like, he says, is fine wine at an affordable price.
Jennifer Pack reporting this. Some news just coming in. President Biden has said he will restrict new oil, gas and mining operations on more than 5 million hectares of land in Alaska in a bid to protect wildlife in the northernmost U.S. state. We'll have more on that story coming up in Business Matters in a couple of hours' time. But that is it for this edition of World Business Report.
You've heard of Charlie Chaplin, right? Well, Charlie Chaplin was my grandfather, and there was a time when he was the biggest star in all the world. But something happened, not just to him, but to hundreds of artists in Hollywood. They were forced to leave, forced out.
All episodes of Hollywood Exiles from the BBC World Service and CBC are available now. Search for Hollywood Exiles wherever you get your podcasts.